It's showtime.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go, off and running for the 20th day of August, 2019. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us live on the interweb tubes. And that's also where you'll find the chat room tab. Pick out a screen name and a password. Jump right in and be ready to be greeted by the early arrivers. That would be Squeaky, as well as longtime inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a third stage guild navigator, still continues not to fold space, for the man cave is the center of the sun. You'll also be moderated by pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Anatole was here a little bit ago, early arriver, but he's off to dinner at the moment and will be back. The only thing that's missing is you. Hop on by. And, of course, every program here at The Horn begins with thanks. We don't have any vitamins to sell you or any Buy Gold Now or apps that... No, we don't. So we have each other. And our little community is self-supporting and self-sustaining. So thanks to our subscribers for the 20th day of the month. That would be thanks to Dr. John and thanks to Carl. Thanks to Armand, and thanks to Vincent. Thank you all very, very kindly for being partial sponsors of the program and helping to knock down about a quarter of the horn funding in any given month. Thank you very kindly. Yes, and thanks. Thanks very kindly to, thanks to Sharon. Thank you, Sharon, very much indeed for doing, Have a Show on Me. You know, in the days of ancient Rome, to be awarded an ovation by the Senate was a very big deal indeed. So, thank you, Sharon. Thank you very kindly, because that took what was going to be a $300 evening and turned it into a $100 evening. That's all we got left to catch up to the 20th day of the month is $100. 10 at 100, or 10 at 10, 5 at 20, 1 at 100, 4 at 2 at 50, 4 at 25. 8 at 12 and a half, 16 at 6 and a quarter, and of course 32 at $3.13. And, well, we're rounding up that half penny and putting it into Agnes's hot tub fund. That's what we're doing, yes. It is a sultry evening here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. I'd say we got about another month of naked radio remaining here, and this is one of those evenings, because it's a, like I said, a sultry 89 degrees here in the studio, and it just doesn't admit of a whole bunch of clothing. No, it is, of course, Titanic or Trumptanic Tuesday, and that means that we will be at least taking note of, if not celebrating, monumental, Titanic even, examples of right-wing intellect. Brother Deacon Asa letting me know that Both engines running at full capacity, Captain. Ah, good. Flank speed, right toward that there iceberg. We'll show it. Mm-hmm. And an early note coming in from Todd in South Carolina, Stan. Lady B may be the Horn family prose laureate, with Darlene making sure everyone shows up to man their posts. I think those are both good calls. Good calls indeed. So, you know, we do. Trump-tanic, Titanic Tuesday is reserved for those really, really special examples of cerebral activity by the white wing. And this day, we do indeed have more than a few examples. More than a few. What do I mean? Well, let's just start at the top. Let's start with the Trump-tanic captain in chief. No, not me. Let's start with Nitwit Nero, who, reaching into a bag of some of history's most vile and murderous moments, showed us today what it is that the Proud Boys and Patriot Prayer and other various and sundry assorted, you know, Nazis, what it is they love about him. Oy.
5 years ago, the concept of even talking about this, even 3 years ago, of cutting off aid to Israel because of two people that hate Israel and hate Jewish people. I can't believe we're even having this conversation. Where has the Democratic Party gone? Where have they gone where they're defending these two people over the state of Israel? And I think any Jewish people that vote for a Democrat, I think it shows either a total lack of knowledge or great disloyalty. All right? Thank you very much, everyone.
Of course, and this isn't something to make jokes about or make sport of. The concept of disloyal Jews is dangerous, and its history is soaked in blood. And I'm not limiting myself to the Holocaust. The idea of Jewish people being of divided loyalty goes well back before the Holocaust. Jewish populations were driven out of various and sundry European countries for, 1,600 years. Off and on. Whether it was France or England, Poland, various principalities that later became Germany, there's a long and bloody history that is accompanied by ideas of Jewish loyalty. And each and every time, it was the most pure and utter bullshit. And each and every time, it was driven by Christians and driven by their hatreds. And here, in the penultimate year of the second decade of the 20th century, it raises its filthy head again. The road we're on is not one that I suspect many of us thought we would find ourselves traveling by this time. Once again, we have been proven wrong in thinking that perhaps somehow, as with the other aspects of American life that we thought had been driven to ground and that we had somehow worked out of our beings, once again, we find ourselves being wrong about that. But it's especially bad, of course, when it doesn't come from some Lulu on one of the seedier sides of the internet, but from the president himself. And it has impacts. Consider 57-year-old Joseph Rubino. Back on July the 24th, he had a car wreck. Joseph Rubino is from New Jersey. Well, when he had his car wreck, the officers who responded to the scene noticed that there were a whole bunch of weapons laying about. Inside the vehicle in particular, a semi-automatic assault handgun, a 9mm semi-automatic assault pistol with a high-capacity magazine, a loaded 9mm pistol, two barrels sawed off from a double-barrel shotgun, a sight for an assault rifle, and a stripped AR-15 bolt carrier. Being made more than a little bit curious by this discovery, law enforcement then executed a search warrant at his home, where they found 14 more weapons. In addition, they found, of course, because America, a cache of methamphetamine, 6 pounds of weed, 200 cannabis vape cartridges, and marijuana edibles. But that wasn't what really grabbed their attention. No, what got them were the items of clothing and bumper stickers that had white supremacist and neo-Nazi slogans. They found a document that purported to be an instruction manual for owning a slave. Other racist material. And that's just, you know, that's just one story out of the, ripped from the pages of the headlines. Because on the other side of the country, off in far California, Southern California, Garden Grove, California, I might note, in Orange County, which, while it got a bunch of its Republicans run out of Congress in the last election, still appears to be a seething hotbed of vicious hatred. Pacifica High School in Garden Grove, California. Where, last year, it has only recently come to light, but last year, high school students there gave the Nazi salute and sang a song that was written to please the ear of Adolf Hitler during the Third Reich. They were so proud of it, they videoed it. These were young student athletes at Pacifica High School in Garden Grove, California. Former home, I believe, of the Crystal Cathedral, was it not? That's just trivia. The Garden Grove Unified School District is, of course, shocked. And but they won't say whether any of the students were disciplined for, you know, being fucking Nazis.
While the district cannot comment on student discipline, the school did address the situation with all involved students and families. The district adheres to strong policies about harassment and cultural sensitivity, and we condemn all acts of anti-Semitism and hate in all forms. We remain focused on educating students about cultural sensitivity and are committed to holding students accountable, educating them on the consequences of their choices and the impact these actions have on our schools and community at large.
Well, the fact that you've got student athletes giving the Nazi salute and singing little Hitler lullabies kind of militates against that statement they made about their adherence to those strong policies. And the question, of course, is how does a swim team from California find out about a song written by Hams Neal and made popular as an inspiration to Nazi soldiers between 1933 and 1945. The song, identified by a historian, is said to be obscure in the extreme. Peter Simi, a professor of extremism studies at Chapman University, also a resident in Orange County, said, "It's not something you'd expect somebody to accidentally know about. There's some means by which they acquired knowledge about the song and associated Nazi issues. Are they on websites or web forums or other social media platforms where they're engaging with others informed on these issues?" Well, the fact that the Nazis in America got through to the Pacifica High School water polo team, no, really, tells us, as I keep trying to warn, that the problem of Nazis in America is far greater than most folks would dare to even acknowledge. The Nazis in America, the maggots and Trump supporters, are doing everything in their power to get to our kids early. Because if you can get them early, you can keep them for life. Damn. And then, well, there's Ohio. And a guy by the name of James Patrick Reardon. And understand, I haven't been sitting on these stories just waiting for a chance to, I mean, I do that sometimes. Sometimes I hold a story because I know it will become more relevant later. I just have a sense. This is not that. These are just three random stories that popped up on the same day that Donald Trump accused 75% of the Jews in this country of being disloyal Americans. And so, yeah, over the weekend past, 20-year-old James Patrick Reardon, found himself under arrest because, well, and by the way, the mugshot shows him smiling like it's his freaking junior year college portrait, minus, you know, the orange. He's smiling like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush. He put up a video on Instagram. And, of course, why people put this stuff on social media has become an entire subdiscipline of I guess, psychology. But he did, and they do. Brother Deacon Asa asking the question, how do Trump's Aryan Nation supporters reconcile between his Jew pandering and their deep-seated desire to slaughter the Jews? Asa says, I'm asking for a close personal friend. And you have to say it that way, by the way, under orders. That's the Lewis Black pronunciation, in case you're wondering. So James Reardon Jr., and goodness gracious, James Reardon Sr. must be oh so proud, put a video up to Instagram earlier in August where he proudly produced images of himself shooting a semi-automatic rifle. In the background of what he was doing, there were screams and sirens. He even captioned his video. Police identified the Youngstown Jewish family community shooter as a local white nationalist, Seamus O'Reardon. Well, I got around on social media. And reached for comment. New Middletown, Ohio Police Chief Vincent DeGidio said, this is a person that has declared himself a white nationalist. With the hate crimes and everything else going on, we want to make sure to do our part to make sure this person was taken off the streets very quickly. So they raided his home. They picked up a couple of AR-15s. They picked up ammunition. They seized a gas mask. They seized body armor. Charges filed against him include aggravated menacing and harassment. He was held on $250,000 bond and had a first appearance, an initial appearance in court there yesterday. So we're up to three now, right? Three. No, we're not. Well, there's more. Tristan Scott Wicks in Florida told his girlfriend he was going to open fire on a large crowd. Brandon Wagshall, 22 years old in Connecticut, was busted for trying to import high-capacity magazines into Connecticut. Wagshall and Reardon shared something in common in that they're social media was positively filthy with manifestations of their hatred based on race and sexual orientation. Five. And now six. One from earlier this month, in which, in the wake of the El Paso massacre,
Another young white supremacist was arrested for plotting to attack another Walmart. We've got bigger problems than we're willing to admit. This is all traceable back to the same people who ideologically stand with those who marched in Charlottesville chanting, "Jews will not replace us." It is the most sickening of rhetoric, and it often goes past rhetoric. And it's part of a pattern. It's been going on for a while now. Do you remember the attacks on a Jewish cemetery by a white supremacist in St. Louis? Such that even the dead cannot rest in peace as far as these supporters of Donald Trump are concerned? This is the reality. You'll notice that these are all young, white, mostly Christian males. You know what they aren't? Muslims. They aren't Palestinians. They aren't Jordanians. They're not Malaysian or Indonesian. They're not Pakistani. They are what Christopher Wray, the director of the FBI, described them as: homegrown domestic terrorists. Steve in New York says, the maggotlings in California. It occurs to me, one, these kids really buy into that shit. Two, these kids don't buy into it. They know what it represents, but did it anyway to aggravate. Or three, these kids don't really know or understand what the Third Reich was, but know it would piss people off and did it anyway to aggravate. Now I'm trying to understand which is worst. Well, and in the follow-up paragraphs to the story out of Southern California, you had the director of the Holocaust Museum in L.A. offering to bring each and every one of those boys, they are certainly not young men, to show them what the Nazis did. And maybe that would work. I don't know. But given the fact that the fascist right wing is working as hard as it is to recruit young white boys into their ranks, I suspect they knew damned good and well what that salute means. In former years in this country, if you were caught doing that, there would be someone standing there to say, "Don't ever do it again." But that generation has largely passed on. I just noted in news from West Virginia that our last remaining Pearl Harbor survivor, passed away in the last week or so. 96 years old. My father entered the Second World War at 18 in 1943, less than 2 years before the war would be over. He was born in 1924. So that gives you the idea, it gives you an idea that even the youngest veterans of the global war against fascism are just about gone now. And it's so typically Republican. Remember that Dwight Eisenhower wrote to a cousin or some such back in the 1950s that any political party that proposed an end to Social Security would, in his words, cease to be a national party almost immediately, or words to that effect. And for as long as the generation that could remember an America before Social Security was alive, that remained a true statement. Because elder poverty in this country was broad-based, heart-rending, and deadly. And so the generation that watched the relief that Social Security brought were ready to guard it with their very lives. And that gave rise to the notion that Social Security was the third rail of American politics. But slowly, ever so slowly, as that generation died out, in my family, that generation would be represented by one of my grandmothers, born 1894, died 1985. And once her generation was gone, then the Republicans felt free to begin to act against it, to the point that in January of 2005, George W. Bush said, "I got me some political capital, and I'm going to spend it," and tried to piratize Social Security, and only a desperate fight saved it, such as it is. Because for my generation, we've already been fucked where Social Security is concerned, because back in our 20s, in the Reagan 80s, we were too busy, you know, drinking beer through funnels and smoking dope and whatnot to notice that some people who had the dignity to keep their goddamn suit coats on in the Oval Office were screwing us out of our retirements. Retirement? Yeah, when you're 23 years old. Retirement. I'd like to build a time machine. Go back and have a nice long talk with that boy who was me. But actually, I remember when they did it, because I was working in news by then. I remember the screwing. I remember the grand bargain and the Tax Reform Act of 1986, cobbled together by Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill. Like it was yesterday. And the same thing goes with for the transgenerational memory and wisdom acquired at such great cost at places like Guadalcanal and Anzio and Omaha Beach and Dieppe. And now that that generation is fading away, the Republicans, who, remember, in the 1930s, 1938, 39, 40, were isolationist as hell, and in some instances downright cozy with people like Mussolini and Hitler. Well, with that generation that did the bloody work fading away, the Republicans are free to return to their fascist sympathizing roots. And we see it practically every day in this country. And in this particular instance, well, a man with piss-colored hair whose grandchildren, some of them, are at least nominally Jewish. I've heard that Jared and Ivanka, for all their being Orthodox, they're not so Orthodox. But, with yeah, he can say shit like...
State of Israel. And I think any Jewish people that vote for a Democrat, I think it shows either a total lack of knowledge or great disloyalty. All right? Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you,
Brad. He knows, among other things, because there is some realpolitik to this. He knows his numbers are tanking, and they're not likely to get any better. And so he's been told he's got to scrounge votes wherever he can find them, and he sees in a 75% voting block in the American Jewish population, I suppose, the potential to try to pull some of those people away by cynically equating Israel with Jewishness, equating Zionism with Jewishness. It's not the same. One may freely oppose the policies engaged in on an almost daily, well, no, on a daily basis by Israel, and yet not be an anti-Semite. One can oppose fascism and still maintain a close and abiding respect for Jewish people inside and outside of Israel. Kissing Bibi Netanyahu's hairy toe is not the benchmark of whether or not one is anti-Semitic. Young would-be, will someday be, perhaps Trump voters in Orange, California, giving Nazi salutes and singing Nazi fucking marching songs, that's anti-Semitic. Saying that Palestinian people should not have their homes bulldozed isn't. But he wants to try to drive a wedge into a tiny crack, piss all over it, wait for the crack to expand, drive the wedge a little deeper, and then pick up votes that way. American politics is plenty cynical. But that, well, it doesn't get much more cynical. But then again, there's the part of him that is all Dunning-Kruger, insofar as he doesn't know what he doesn't know. And then there's the part of him that knows what he's at least trying to do. The Jewish loyalty thing is a case of the latter. We've got a manifestation of the former. James in Illinois says, the Don thinks everyone in Israel loves Netanyahu. Bullshit. Like everyone in America loves him? Oh, and by the way, Psycho Bibi's wife threw a hissy on an El Al plane. El Al, the national airline of Israel. Mrs. Netanyahu had a conniption because she was not publicly welcomed aboard a flight that was taking them to Kiev in Ukraine. It was documented. The hissy was seen publicly. And then, of course, they put out a propaganda statement saying that everybody misunderstood their lying eyes and lying ears. So he doesn't understand anything other than his desire to literally scare up a vote or two. But he also invade on India and Pakistan today. And the dispute over Kashmir. Behold the genius that is Trump.
Great relationship with both of them, but they are not exactly friends at this moment.
At this moment, dumbass? They haven't exactly been friends since 1948. A little lesson in what happens with mass migrations there, but we'll let that one slide for the time being. How many wars have they fought? Not exactly good friends. But there's a reason for it, or at least, well, the Tangerine Tiberius thinks there's a reason for it.
Complicated situation. A lot has to do with religion. Religion's a complicated subject.
Well, thanks for that breaking news flash, dipshit. Religion's a complicated subject. Well, dive right in, Donnie. Quote us a few lines from the Rig Veda. Or maybe a couple of lines from the Quran. Religion's a complicated subject. But see, and you can replicate this argument with the Middle East as well, and you know, Israel and Palestine and their neighbors. If you ascribe a contentious relationship over land to the pronouncements of one's various and sundry imaginary friends, the one thing you've done is make sure that the problem will never be solved. Because one can always find some religious justification for one's bloody bullshit arguments. One must recall, for instance, that in pre-Civil War, the pre-Civil War United States, the Old Testament and the New were frequently cited by Southern preachers as justification for chattel slavery in the South. It's just a fact. But this was This press avail was noteworthy for the number of different places and different topics on which he opined freely and openly, and said, as the saying goes with the hip kids these days, the quiet part's loud. You may be aware, I trust you are, that the Trump regime, yeah, I know, James in Illinois says, tell that knee slapper about the two Corinthians. Two Corinthians walk into a bar. But you're probably aware that Bill Barr is going after the trans community now. They're arguing, among other things, that trans people should be able to be fired just for being trans. Trans men, trans women. One case centers on, of all places, and, you know, why not, a funeral, a chain of Christian funeral homes. Christian funeral homes. Yep. R.G. and G.R. Harris Funeral Homes, Inc. versus Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is the case. And at the lower court, there was a ruling that those Christian funeral homes had violated the law of the United States of America when they fired Amy Stevens. Amy Stevens is a woman whose transition began in 2013. They had rules. The Christian funeral home chain did. Men had to wear suits and ties, and women had to wear skirts and jackets. And the EEOC argued below that Title VII of the U.S. Code, which prohibits workplace discrimination on the basis of sex, applied to transgender workers. The case, because sometimes legal cases take a long time, the case began back during our salad days, the days of the Obama administration. When the EEOC was willing to speak up for trans people. Now the EEOC is vastly different. The case has gone on up to the Supreme Court. It will be heard in the 2019-2020 term that begins on the first Monday in October. And it is now the stated position of the Trump regime that Title VII does not apply to trans people, and that trans people are not protected against being fired. You know, for being trans. Not for doing their job wrong, but for the kind of clothing they wear. That's the position that will be argued by the Department of Justice and the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission was so appalled that they wouldn't sign off on the brief. Instead, Solicitor General Noel Francisco, put in that position, of course, by Chlamydia Claudius. Well, they're arguing that Title VII, sure, that applies if women are treated worse at a job than men, but not if a trans woman is treated at work worse than non-transgender workers. The government, you remember the government, it's supposed to be a secular government that does not, that we got the Establishment Clause thingy, Congress shall make no law establishing, right. Well, the Bar DOJ has said that they are in complete agreement with the funeral home owner, conservative Christian Thomas Rost, R-O-S-T, who says, the Bible teaches that it is wrong for a biological male to deny his sex by dressing as a woman, or for a biological female to deny her sex by dressing as a man. And went on to say, I'd by God fire any woman that wouldn't wear a skirt to work. And this, of course, is being carried forward under the bullshit rubric of religious freedom. So while trans men and trans women are the canaries in the coal mine in this case, it actually extends to cisgendered people. Now, men, under no set of circumstances except for bizarre right-wing rallies in Portland, because a guy showed up, and I had no idea such things existed, wearing something called a utila kilt. It was camo, of course. That made it macho. But no, he showed up in a skirt. But generally speaking, in our culture, a man who would put on a skirt would be laughed out of virtually any portion, any area of our so-called modern society. So there probably won't be a bunch of cisgendered men getting fired for wearing a skirt to work if, say, people like Brett Kavanaugh and Ann's boy Neil and Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas and Sammy Bad Breath shoot him in the back of the head at 30 feet away, Alito, and old Balls and Strikes Roberts decide to screw over the, screw over men and women alike. Men, of course, are not going to have much in the way of a dog in the hunt. But in our culture, as an aspect of freedom, women long ago began asserting the right to wear trousers. And this ruling would say that if they get away with it, an employer who makes a women shall wear skirts rule absolutely has the right to fire a woman who dares to violate the Mosaic law and put on a pair of pants. And that bit that Rost guy cited, it says, men shall not put on the raiment of a woman or woman the raiment of a man, at least in the King James Version. As I've often argued, how the fuck could you tell? It's not like they had designer gowns. Everybody was walking around basically in a burlap sack. The raiment aspect of it ain't the clothing. It's the bangles and the hairpins. And remember, because this is somewhat important, A culture never makes rules that don't have to be made. The only reason there is an Old Testament proscription against fucking the sheep is because people were fucking the sheep. And so you had to say, hey, whoa, wait a minute, Matt. God talked to me. He said, quit fucking the sheep or we're going to take you out of the city gates and we're going to throw rocks at you until you're a bloody mess and dead. Okay? Quit fucking the sheep. God said. And by extension, you don't come up with thou shalt not put on the raiment of a woman nor a woman put on the raiment of a man unless you've already got people in your culture who are doing precisely that. Which, whether one likes it or not, is further proof that gender and sexuality have a certain fluidity, not just in modern times, but probably since we crawled down out of the trees once the coast was clear and the fucking cheetahs were gone. Flavio reminding us, Bill Barr is Opus Dei. You do know this. And so are some other members of the SCOTUS. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, the self-whippers. Stephen New York says, funeral home. The Supreme Court has actually already ruled on this. I can call to speak about this if you wish. Wait a minute, let me check. No. There may be an injunction in place, but no, this story takes, I mean, this is August 2019, right? Yeah, the dateline on this story is August the 19th, 2019. So, among other things, yeah, the Trump regime has put forth a proposed rule that would let anybody who contracts with the federal government fire LGBTQ workers over religious liberty. But the case will be heard in the 2019-2020 term. EEOC won at the appellate level. This is, Steve, I'm pretty sure this is not the same thing. Because the DOJ has flipped, otherwise the DOJ would not have flip-flopped on it. But all of this leads to the following. Today, with Nitwit Nero.
I've been taking steps to make it easier to discriminate against LGBT people in the workforce. Are you okay with those actions?
Well, you know, I just got an award and an endorsement yesterday from the exact group, and a group they gave, you saw that, they gave me.
Doesn't that just tell you everything you could possibly want to know? Your administration wants to make it easier to fire LGBTQ people. Are you okay with that? And his answer is, I got an award from some gay people. Wow.
The endorsement yesterday, and I was very honored to, is it Log Cabin, the Log Cabin Group, and I was very honored to receive it. No, I've done very well with that community. Some of my biggest supporters are of that community, and I think I talk to them a lot about it.
At this point in time, the Log Cabin Republicans are the functional equivalent of capos for Trump or Zonderkommandos for Trump. Those who know their World War II history and their Third Reich history will know what capos and Zonderkommandos were, right?
I think I've done really very well with that community. As you know, Peter Thiel and so many others there, they're with me all the way, and they like the job I'm doing. And I just got a big endorsement from the Log Cabin Group. Yeah.
So, in other words, I got an award. And at the very end, he says Log Cabin, but as Steve points out, he couldn't even say LGBT. Oh, and just because we live out here in front of the curve, something to pay attention to, say, in the coming month. There's been a bit of pearl clutching and hand wringing over the fact that Julius Geezer made some noises with his mouth about maybe doing a background check bill, maybe thinking about, talking about, considering possibly having a meeting to discuss whether there should be a conference to form a blue ribbon commission panel on red flag laws. And the simpletons in the for-profit media said, look, he may be willing to compromise. Silly, silly multimillionaires of the for-profit media. Silly, silly, silly. Because now, well, you know, he's taken a couple of phone calls from some NRA members, and they reminded him that they're probably the only reason he got elected was because of the, you know, the Russian money that they funneled into his campaign with the NRA as the conduit, National Ruble Association. And now he's not particularly interested, and he's kind of doing a little Trumpy two-step away from the idea of doing anything about the bloodletting that continues in our country. And so by way of just a heads up, yeah, Congress comes back on the 8th, and probably nothing is going to happen with regard to those two bills that are sitting in a pool of blood on Moscow Mitch's desk. But more importantly, there's a looming budget crisis that everybody, we were told, had been fixed. Hint. It probably hasn't been fixed. So don't be surprised in September if it turns out that we wind up spending a couple of weeks talking about the potential for a government shutdown, because the potential is there. This man is a pathological liar, at least during the times when he's vaguely self-aware. It's coming. Just please, don't be shocked. Oh, today was a real Lulu. At one point in time, I mean, India, Pakistan, well, it's a religious thing. The Jews are disloyal. He got an award from the Log Cabin Republicans. By the way, the Log Cabin Republicans probably wish that he hadn't mentioned them at all, because they're getting savaged on social media now, and rightly so. But this is probably the best. And by best, I mean worst. A whole minute's worth of digression on the G8. And why Russia isn't in it. For this, you might want the hockey puck.
next year you host the G7. Would you like to have Vladimir Putin back in the G7, make it the G8 again?
So it was the G8 for a long time, and now it's the G7. And a lot of the time we talk.
So just notice what happens here. He's asked, would he like to, the G7, would he like to have Putin back in, make it the G8 again? And he explains that it used to be the G8, but now it's the G7. The only reason he knew that was because of the way that the reporter set up the question. There's almost nothing left working inside his, what used to be, I guess, a brain, but are now just a hollow space filled by screaming spirochetes, you know, and crank.
About Russia. We're talking about Russia because I've gone to numerous G7 meetings.
That's how he knows it's Russia, because he's, oh, Jesus. At this point in time, he's so far gone, like I said before, the only thing that Dr. Ronnie the Candyman can do is struggle to get the dosage right. And they got to get this shit to happen in the late morning or the early afternoon, because he's not worth a tinker's damn the rest of the time, and especially not once the sun goes down.
And I guess President Obama, because Putin outsmarted him, President Obama thought it wasn't a good thing to have Russia in, so he wanted Russia out.
Can you make any sense out of that? Because it's a real struggle, at least for me. Putin, and, you know, I think after 8 years of dedicating himself to the job, Barack Obama is probably not just sitting there waiting for every syphilitic word to drop out of Chlamydia Claudius's gob. But much as we got a big kick out of Key and Peele's Obama anger translator, and this is just pure fantasy on my part, I do like to think that every now and then he sees one of these clips and he says, I'm going to go to Washington, D.C. right now and give that man a good talking to. And Michelle has to reach over and say, Barack, sit down. You're not president anymore. Won't do any good. It's never done any good. We saw that the day we left. Probably doesn't happen. But, that's right. Putin outsmarted Barack Obama by invading Ukraine, which is what made the world community, or at least the other seven nations, throw Russia the fuck out of the G8. Because huggable, cuddleable, lovable, snuggleable, sweet, wouldn't hurt a fly, Pooty was just itching to get thrown out of the G8. Ouch. Yeah, that Steve picked up on that, too. Putin outsmarted Obama, who got him out of the G8. Isn't that like a pitcher outsmarted a hitter when the hitter smacked a grand slam off the pitcher? Yes, that's exactly what that's like. In the bottom of the ninth, down 3 runs.
I think it's much more appropriate to have Russia in. It should be the G8, because a lot of the things we talk about have to do with Russia. So I could certainly see it being the G8 again, and if somebody would make that motion, I would certainly be disposed to think about it very favorably.
Well, dumbass, why don't you make that motion? If this is all carried by motion, I don't know what their operating rules are. But you make the motion. But you can't, can you? Tangerine Tiberius. Because if you do that, everybody will just look up and go, yeah, he's definitely Pooty's puppet. Pooty's got his hand right up his adipose ass, and he's working his mouth for him. Russia is not an economic player. Russia has one thing: planet-destroying oil and gas and nuclear weapons that tend to blow up in the lab. And subs that have to be launched in moving underwater ceremonies on the bottom of the ocean floor. Play a lot of chess, good chess players. Used to make some lovely music and some fine poetry. Write some damn good literature. But in terms of being an economic force, nah, yet. I mean, caviar. But even the caviar market's going to collapse with the rising temperatures and the climate crisis. Sturgeon don't do too well in tropical waters. But he wants his master back in the G8.
I certainly see it being the G8 again, and if somebody would make that motion, I would certainly be disposed to think about it very favorably. But as you know, for most of the time, it was the G8. It included Russia. And President Obama didn't want Russia in because he got outsmarted. Well, that's not the way it really should work.
It's also not the way it did work. But nobody tell that to the toddler in chief. Because, you know, I guess it doesn't much matter to him if a sovereign nation gets overrun or invaded. Nah. God damn. And that's just an hour of, you know, Nitwit Nero. There's a hell of a lot more Titanic intellect out there. Hot careers, says Steve on the West Coast. Thank God we know now that the gender-appropriate wearing of a skirt or a suit to work at the funeral parlor is of far greater importance than simply being willing and able to hold a job at a funeral parlor. Bound to lead to some kinky necrophilia anyway, which is likely what the Christian owner is secretly worried about. Worried about doing. Thanks, Steve. A member of the fraternity of Steve. And meanwhile, couple of notes. This is really kind. This comes from our buddy Hung Like Jesus. Bob, I was thinking with your brain and the way it works, if you were a right winger, I'd have to convert. That's how much I respect you and your ideas. It would be scary as hell, but I'd have to do it, if for nothing else than to keep a goddamned eye on you. Glad you're not. Very glad indeed. Oh, if you ever catch me doing that, you'll know that things aren't good at all, and that my brains have gone completely sideways. But I take that as a high compliment, unlike Jesus. I do. I really, really do. And then this from Kyle in Kentucky Stan. I guess this is as good as is a good story dominee for Titanic Tuesday. The other day, my Republican grandfather was going on about how the Democrats want to ban windows with the Green New Deal because of solar energy. Forget the fact that on its face the claim is, well, stupid, doesn't do it justice. In order to have solar energy, you need the sun, so how does banning windows in any way help with solar energy? I got nothing. Well, but see, Republicans aren't interested in facts. Maggots aren't interested in facts. They're interested in bias confirmation, and they're interested, well, to expand on that idea, in anything that makes that supports their inherent bigotries and ignorances. So they'll say that, well, that the Green New Deal is going to take away all our hamburgers. or that the Green New Deal is going to take away all our golf, or that it's going to ban Windows. I mean, that one's pretty easy to take apart insofar as there are two kinds of solar energy, active and passive. For instance, in this here 89-degree studio right now, I'm experiencing some pretty intense passive solar energy. It's what makes, well, you could say that solar energy powers naked radio because it makes the wearing of clothing ungoddamn bearable. But no. But that's all, you know, that's also, you know, old folks latch on to things. As I've said before, my grandmother used to argue, and this is before she slipped into the hell of dementia, she would argue hell and be damned that the metric system would cause us to not be able to tell time because we'd have to change our clocks to metric and our calendars would be ruined forever. This, I think, is what is referred to generally as sot in their ways. And Darlene in Connecticut says, but of course, at least 2 weeks will be wasted on the prospect of a government shutdown. That fits perfectly with Moscow Mitch's agenda to waste as much congressional time as possible doing nothing and passing none of the progressive legislation Nancy sends over. I know you know, Bob, that's exactly what Moscow Mitch does. He winds the clock down and collects his lucrative paycheck each week. Hey, long as the check clears, right? Right. Egg-damn-zactly. A little correction. That's true. That's true. Steve in New York says, hey, the Russians make great Petrushka dolls. And they pretty much got the market cornered on Petrushka dolls. Well, I don't know. I think I saw one in a store the other day that had a Made in China label on it. Is there an issue with Skype? Tech question coming from Steve. No, it's me still having the audio pot up for playing things like Nitwit Nero and people calling in, and I keep trying to turn the damn ringtone off, and every solution I find doesn't seem to work. It would be nice if it would stop, or I could find a way to stop it. Floating nukes, says David in South Carolina, Stan. How about them floating nuclear power plants? I know. What a great idea. Eesh. So, hey, you know what? It's Tuesday. And Tuesdays and Thursdays mean the Green News Report from Brad and Desi, which I enjoy immensely. So we should probably check in with them so that I don't screw up and blow past it. Since I'm going to be playing the Green News Report, please don't anybody call on Skype. That way we won't have to listen to the Skype ringtone while Brad and Desi try to get the Green News across. Could we do that? Thanks. Much obliged. And in the meantime, we've only got $100 to raise to stay even with this 20th day of August. April, August, potato, potato. This 20th day of August. And the total fundraising goal to finish the month of August and have ourselves a bunch of fundraising free radio, well, that's $700. If somehow or another we raise $700 this evening, it'd be fundraising free radio all the way to, let's see, how does August work out? All the way to the 30th. So the sooner we knock down that $700, or at least 100 to stay even, the sooner we have fundraising free radio, which, like I said, it may actually mean more to me than it does to y'all, but it is so nice not to have to talk about it. So anyway, a little break and the Green News Report. Okay? Thanks.
It's Tuesday, August 20, 2019.
Some folks are demanding that the mayor of Newark, New Jersey, resign. This after high levels of lead have been found in the water there.
Another major city suffers a lead contamination crisis. U.S. fracking boom causing a spike in global methane emissions. Long-term exposure to air pollution is like smoking a pack of cigarettes a day, says new report. Plus,
the reason we've been blocked is because one party that is wedded to moronic refusal to accept science.
2020 Democratic candidate warns Senate filibuster must end to solve the climate crisis.
All of those crises and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Look at the left. Look what they're trying to do. They're trying to make it seem, well, it's for the children, why we need some sort of Green New Deal.
Yeah, the hell with those children who want to survive on a livable planet. Whiners. Am I right, Fox News? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, this is very disturbing news in Newark, New Jersey. It's like Flint all over again.
Yes, unfortunately it is. State officials in New Jersey have requested federal assistance to deal with a growing lead contamination crisis in the water supply of the city of Newark. State and city officials have stepped up delivery of bottled water to residents amid new testing indicating that the extent of lead contamination in Newark's municipal water supply is geographically much broader than previously understood, even in homes that are using special filters. Officials have asked the EPA to boost their limited emergency water supplies and financial resources to address the crisis. Like in Flint, Michigan, the lead contamination is caused by aging lead service lines leaching the toxic lead into drinking water.
Now, in Flint, the officials there actually took an action that caused the type of water that led to the leaching of the lead. Is there a specific action in Newark that caused this, or has this been going on for some time?
They don't know why it has spiked recently, but they do say they must replace their lead service lines.
Yeah.
The Washington Post has published a deep data analysis of temperature records indicating that several regions in the United States have already warmed by nearly 2 degrees Celsius. That's the limit in global temperature rise that nations adopted in the United Nations Paris Climate Accord. The report found that the Northeast is a hotspot. For example, New Jersey and Rhode Island happen to be among the U.S.'s fastest warming states outside of Alaska, and they've already reached the 2 degrees Celsius threshold right now when compared with their temperature data from the late 1800s.
Not good news for New Jersey today.
Nope. The fracking boom in the United States has caused levels of climate warming methane emissions to spike in the Earth's atmosphere. Methane is a more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide on shorter timescales, so identifying the source of the spike is really important. Scientists say new data indicates that the huge increase in methane entering the atmosphere over the last 10 years comes primarily from the shale gas fracking boom in the United States and Canada. The Trump administration rolled back Obama-era regulations that required the oil and gas industry to reduce methane leaks from operations. The Trump administration claimed that voluntary industry efforts would suffice.
So how's that working out for you?
Not surprisingly, the new data shows that is not the case. The Trump rollback also costs taxpayers revenue. Drillers don't have to pay millions in royalties every year when they waste natural gas extracted from public lands.
So we lose revenue, but the fossil fuel companies make more profits.
Exactly.
Then I think this is all working out just as planned.
In addition to the climate damage caused by fossil fuel carbon emissions, there's also the costly public health impact. A new study shows that long-term exposure to fossil fuel air pollution in the United States can have the same effect as smoking a pack of cigarettes a day. The biggest culprit, the study found, was ground-level ozone, which is generated when vehicle tailpipe exhaust from internal combustion engines chemically reacts with sunlight, a process that gets turbocharged during heat waves. The researchers warn that ground-level ozone levels will continue to increase unless we transition away from fossil fuels.
You know, if you just stopped reading all of these reports, we wouldn't have all of these problems, Des.
They don't go away if you ignore them.
Tell that to the Republicans.
Finally, Washington State Governor and 2020 Democratic presidential candidate Jay Inslee on MSNBC said that if he is elected, he will ban fracking. He also also excoriated congressional Republicans' denial of climate science and their obstruction of all legislative efforts to rein in fossil fuel emissions. Inslee is also one of the few 2020 Democratic presidential candidates to call for ending the Senate legislative filibuster if Democrats regain the Senate majority in 2020, if they wish to have a chance at passing any kind of climate legislation.
As soon as we get a president and a Senate and get rid of the filibuster so we can adopt climate change legislation, we'll do what this nation is capable of doing, which is innovating our way to defeat climate change.
Be careful what you wish for, Governor Inslee. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Give up what you wish for, because you just might get it. And if you get it, then you just might not know what to do with it, because it might just come back on you tenfold. I said, be careful what you wish for.
And just following up on the log cabin Republican story, it has not been without ramifications, that endorsement within the group itself. Let's see. One person, Casey Pick, a former leader of the Log Cabin Republicans. Well, she said, call me any name you please, and I know folks will, but please don't call me a Log Cabin Republican. Then there's Robert Turner, who formerly was the head of the Washington, D.C. chapter of Log Cabin Republicans. He bailed out on the group, and he said endorsing Trump is a step too far, and it makes him sad. Then Jennifer Horn, who had up to recently been a member of the Log Cabin Republican National Board, well, she turned in her resignation yesterday evening. Quote, there is no world where I can sit down at the dining room table and explain to my children that I just endorsed Donald Trump for president. It is contrary to everything that I have ever taught them about what it means to be a good, decent, principled member of society. Pretty soon, they'll be able to hold the National Convention of the Log Cabin Republicans in a log phone booth, or maybe a log closet. God almighty. Let's see here. Okay, I'm going to try a little experiment here. There. Okay. Answering a couple of tech questions. Trying to sort out making the Skype ringy dingy go away. And if I catch it quickly enough, I found one way to do it, but it's kind of complicated. But you don't care about that. We are at the halfway point of the program for this evening. And like I said, we've kind of done the... the Trump portion of the program. We don't have any sound bites for this, but maybe I buried the evening's lead. Because there's evil, and there's evil. You may recall that the Trump regime went to court to argue that it had no legal obligation to let little children kept in cages get a bath or to provide them with toothbrushes and toothpaste. That is the disgusting level of venality. And outright wickedness that defines this group of fascist thugs. Or it did until recently. I'm looking at a story from CNBC that was published today. Now, by way of background, also remember that at least three Guatemalan infants at the Mexican border died not too long back. The hows and wherefores of them dying are not entirely clear. It's a pretty good bet they picked up a virus once they got up here. Among us. They burned with fever. They froze with chills. They ached. They sweated. And they died. There's something about August that makes me kind of grieve. In early August, you see the first, especially if it's been a little droughty, you see the first drying leaves turn from green to gold, sometimes splotched with brown, and fall from the trees. The goldenrod comes on. The purple-topped ironweed. The crickets begin their sleigh bell song that sounds not like summer, but like a dirge for its end. In short, August arrives, and no matter how hot it is, I begin to look around and wonder where my heavy wool Stormy Cromer hat is, because it won't be long till it's cold. Won't be long till we go from fretting about the heat in this studio to fretting about the freezing temperatures and seeing one's breath before one talking into the microphone. The breath, me, not the breath talking. Breath doesn't, I mean, you know. That's what I get for trying to be elegiac. But in reality, there are real-world consequences to the waning of summer. One of those consequences is that, well, what is typically referred to as flu season will soon be with us. And it won't just be flu season in the Northeast or flu season in the on the Atlantic seaboard. It'll be flu season in California. It'll be flu season in Florida, flu season in Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota. It'll be flu season all over the United States, including the Texas-Mexico border. And so, the fine, fine, God-fearing, upstanding, patriotic members of the Customs and Border Patrol, well, they've announced that they will, by God, not be providing flu shots to the people we're keeping in cages and concentration camps at the southern border, and for that matter, in the area of the diaspora of misery that has spread as far as places like Rhode Island. Emailing CNBC, a Customs and Border Protection spokescreep, said,
in general, due to the short-term nature of CBP holding and the complexities of operating vaccination programs, neither CBP nor its medical contractors administer vaccinations to those in our custody. We frankly don't give a flying fuck whether a goddamned epidemic breaks out and kills all of those brown people. No, I added that last part. Neither CBP nor its medical contractors administer vaccinations to those in our custody.
A group of doctors have written a letter to Representatives Rosa DeLauro, a good congresswoman, and Lucille Roybal-Allard, another good one. And they've begged Congress to investigate health conditions at our concentration camps. You know, before we started putting children in cages, we'd gone almost a decade without a child dying in the custody of U.S. immigration forces. Dr. Jonathan Winkoff of Harvard signed the letter, along with forensic pathologist Judy Melinek and Johns Hopkins public health professors Dr. Joshua Sharfstein and Dr. Paul Spiegel. Dr. Winkoff said, "I can tell you from personal experience that child deaths are rare events. When I learned that multiple children had died in detention from potentially preventable causes, it truly disturbed me. The country needs urgent answers to that question so that children stop dying in detention." Do you remember the, and it still persists, do you remember the recent kerfuffle with all those good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Republicans, Christians, hooting and howling and screaming about how we can't be giving health care to none of them goddamned illegals?
Of course, if they were fetuses, we'd care about them deeply, at least until they were born.
Yeah. They probably, those good God-fearing, etc., Christians, Republicans, they would probably view an epidemic sweeping through our concentration camps as some sort of justice delivered by their vengeful, bloodthirsty God.
Well, if they didn't want the goddamn flu, they shouldn't have goddamn come to America, motherfuckers. I'm not supposed to say goddamn. Well, if they didn't want it, they shouldn't have come here. It ain't like they don't get the flu in Guatemala. Do they get vaccinations down there? I think not. Well, actually, they do.
Dr. Julie Linton is chair of the American Academy of Pediatrics Council on Immigrant Child and Family Health. She said there's a number of things that we can do to prevent deaths and infection. Those do not include holding children in cage-like facilities and warehouses. She went on to point out that the fact of incarceration, being that it is so mentally and emotionally and spiritually devastating, can serve to weaken the immune system of children and adults alike. She then said that, you know, things like open toilets and insufficient sanitary supplies like soap create a breeding ground for infection. The Centers for Disease Control advise that everybody over 6 months of age have a flu shot in this country. What do we mean when we say that we will not give them flu shots? We're talking about over 70,000 unaccompanied children who have been captured and caged at the border. 432,838 so-called family units have been gathered to the tender mercies of the Trump regime. Imagine what happens to a population that's held in standing room only facilities for up to a week. Standing room only. Gosh, that sounds like people being stuffed into cattle cars where they couldn't even lie down. Dr. Winkoff went on and added, "Flu deaths are particularly tragic, in my opinion, because they're almost always preventable with good public health measures." On the other hand, a CBP spokescreep said that there's been a dramatic increase in medical personnel. Gosh, there are about 200 now compared with 20 a year ago. Medical personnel on site are available 24/7 to provide medical diagnosis and treatment, address infectious disease issues, and coordinate referral to and follow-up from local health system emergency rooms. Funny thing is, all three of those babies were taken to the local ERs, and at least one or two of them were sent back to die in captivity. Some just died. One or two, I think, died in the hospital. Despite what the Centers for Disease Control say, CBP has taken it upon itself to determine when people need vaccinations and when they don't. If they require vaccination, they refer to local health systems, or they may receive vaccinations if determined necessary. Well, the CDC has already made that determination, lady. So just kind of maybe make a mental note of this and recognize that we're preparing ourselves to create another human rights disaster. God, God, God. God forgive America. James in Illinois just sent me a photograph of Colonel John Chivington, late of the 19th century, the man who famously said, "Kill them all," said this of indigenous children, "Kill them all, nits make lice." So if you happen to hang out around any maggots or right-wingers, and one of them should happen to mention that this here is a Christian country, remind them that we're going to leave little infants that they already don't care about being in cages. Remind them that we're going to leave them unvaccinated so that Americans who work for CBP, who are out in the wider world and will get exposed to flu, can bring them back to Guatemalan people who probably have little to no experience from a biological standpoint with that virus, and ask your Christian maggot friend how they feel about millstones. For any who would harm one of these little ones, it would be better for them that a millstone had been hung around their neck and they be cast into the sea. Jack in Shreveport with a note. Russians A buddy of mine used to say the Russians were great at theoretical physics and math, as in chess, since the country didn't spend much on buying academics much equipment for research. These days, in addition to what we know of their meddling with everything from our elections to our industrial controls, I've noticed in online education platforms, they have a good degree of participation in cryptography, mathematics, and economics. I'm sure there's more. I think pure academicians probably don't care to insert politics into their intellectual pursuits, but the state probably pushes in anyway it sees beneficial. These online courses are available worldwide and are continuously available once their design is established. The forums that attach themselves to the courses are susceptible to manipulation as well, if not moderated properly. P.S. One thought about online education that won't stop bugging me is that it will help to kill the campus activism, and boy, do Republicans hate student activism if it's not theirs, that is. The University of Wisconsin system has recently stepped in to mollify and bootlick the Republicans in that state. Because Republicans in Wisconsin won't be happy until they've utterly destroyed the concept, the amazing, brilliant concept known as the Wisconsin idea. Yeah. I can't get over the flu vaccine story. There's no argument against providing the vaccine. Or there's no viable argument against it. Except for the fact that, well, maggots hate the other. It's what gives them a sense of purpose. You know, we kind of began the program talking about homicidal maggots from New Jersey to Florida to Ohio to California. And we wonder how it is that those things come to pass. How do they get hold of our children? Usually this clown shows up on prayer meeting Wednesday. But again, this is something that won't hold till tomorrow. A significant percentage of the maggot base is fairly vibrating with homicidal urges. One of those people is the firefighter prophet we've heard from before, a creep by the name of Mark Taylor. He's absolutely besotted with QAnon. And he really wants to use that as an excuse for what the ancient Romans referred to as proscriptions, or what in more modern parlance might be called purges.
We have this timeline here where the mass arrests, they can't act too quickly because they have to have certain assets in place, like judges, you know, other countries have to be ready to go because this is going to be a global takedown. And then you have another window over here where they wait too long. And so we're in between this period of too soon and too long before we make the mass arrests. And what's happening is what the Lord has shown me is that if they wait too long, which I don't think they will, but if they do, is that it could be another Mogadishu or another Benghazi where the patriots will rise up and say enough's enough. They will take matters into their own hands and they will drag their dead bodies through the streets. They will go to these politicians' houses or offices and drag them out, okay? Because, we want to pray against that. But I have to put that warning out there. I've been sitting on this for a year because we're coming to the pinnacle here where they're going to have to act at some point because the people are not asking for justice. They're demanding it. So the government has to act. Now, if they need to buy more time because they don't have the assets in place quite yet, they need to make probably one or two high-level arrests, high-profile arrests, perp walk them on national television so that people will see that justice is going to be done. Where I think they've got to make the arrests before January if they're going to make them this year. Because if he arrests anyone after January when campaign season starts, it's going to make it look like he's just arresting those that oppose him. So they have a window of time between now and the end of the year to make these arrests. That's what God has shown me as far as this timeline.
Well, you got to agree with him. They have to make the arrests before January if they want to make them in this year. Because January won't be this year anymore. God, the coupling of breathtaking stupidity with mind-bending hate is a toxic brew indeed. And you'll notice he includes that sort of caveat there. I don't want anybody's bodies dragged through the streets like Mogadishu and Benghazi. But it's the but that makes it clear that that's exactly what he wants. You don't talk about that unless you're at least considering the possibility of it. And, of course, he cloaks it in terms of Almighty God telling him that's what's going to happen. You know, a little antipsychotic goes a long way sometimes. And he's been sitting on that for a year. I get the idea he's been sitting on something else, but, well, never mind. And that's what makes... That's what makes some of this so damnably frightening. They really are out there. They really do walk among us. Floating around on their little perceived angel wings, plucking at their harps, waiting for waiting for that great getting up morning when Jesus comes down out of the sky in his holy rolls. And they get to set to slaughtering people. Take a minute with that idea, that concept. Imagine sitting around coming up with scenarios by which you get to go out and tear the framework of this country to pieces and engage in murder, assassination with impunity. Look around where you live. I don't care where you live. At least inside the United States. California or New York, Massachusetts, the most liberal enclaves you can imagine in the United States. And there are people there who, given the opportunity, would gladly act on orders. Because the orders would come with the supposed endorsement of the Almighty. I think I take these people more seriously than a lot of other folks do. And I hope that ultimately I'm wrong. But when you use a tax-free dodge to get on the air and say that, well, God has a kill list, that's how you get to El Paso. That's how you get to mailing pipe bombs to people you perceive to be the enemies of your dear leader. Exactly, Sparky in the chat room. The invisible sky spook. The great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky. And he's got a hit list. And curiously, the only people he's giving it to are the people who have homicidal impulses in the first place. I find that terrifying. And what else? Let's get to the top of the hour. Some people are responding to Carotene Caligula's anti-Semitic tirade today. Over on social media, people understood what a deadly dog whistle it is. Elad Nahorai wrote, "This is it. Trump's anti-Semitic philosophy exposed. If Jews don't agree with him, they aren't good Jews. This is how he gets us killed. Sides with the good ones and spouts hate at the rest, coded or not. Thus, the Soros caravan conspiracy that led to the Pittsburgh massacre." I don't know how that must feel. I can only imagine and try to empathize with the horror that comes with something like that. Then there's this from last weekend. Ottawa, Canada, where they had Drag Queen Story Hour at a local library. Children listening to stories. And guess what? Yeah, the American disease metastasizing across the northern border into Ottawa. And curiously enough, well, that would just be an isolated incident if it weren't for the, well, it's been signed on to as the policy of the Department of Justice in the case I told you about at the beginning of the program. The funeral home case that favorably quotes the funeral home owner saying the very same things that this moron who invaded a library in Ottawa is saying. Not a library, the West Cliff Community Center. A drag queen by the name of Adriana Expose was reading stories to children. Mamas were sitting there holding babies on their laps when this goober busted in, shrieking that homosexuals will not inherit the kingdom of heaven, lesbians will not inherit the kingdom of heaven, you're going to be cast into a lake of fire, and everyone here is going to be cast into a lake of fire because Jesus loves you so much. No, I added the Jesus loves you part. The drag queen herself, Adriana Expose, eventually stepped up and got in this clown's face. no word on whether he was arrested. Let's check in. Let's check in with Minnesota, where Safia Abdullahi and her friend Farhia Abdullahi decided to go into the local Subway in Rochester, Minnesota, at a Walmart there. Always a Walmart. They wanted to get some subs for their little kids. That's when the worker behind the counter at the Subway told Safia Abdullahi to go wash your dirty Muslim hands and go back to your country. Since he was behind the counter, he also had a knife, which he then proceeded to wave at the customers. His name, by the way, is Andrew Benning. Safia said, I was very scared of him. I had children with me, and they witnessed the whole thing. I could not do anything about it. I never felt like that before. Subway got right on it with the PR department and said, we're engaging a thorough review. And in the meantime, the franchise owner is taking this opportunity to review anti-bias training with staff to ensure that everyone who walks through the door receives the best Subway experience. When the authorities spoke with Andrew Benning, he was ready with an excuse. I lost my temper. I never threatened to hurt them. She was insulting me. She wanted to talk to my manager, but I didn't think she needed to. The only reason she asked to speak to the manager was because Andrew Benning was behaving like a shitheel to her. And when she said she wanted to speak to the manager, he said, the manager won't talk to trash like you. Working for minimum wage or damn near it. A couple of moral and decent Walmart employees intervened. Even though the guy had a knife in his hand. Good for them. And Andrew Benning is facing misdemeanor charges of disorderly conduct. He had a knife in his hand. Why wasn't he charged with brandishing? Beats me. Oh, and by the way, we have to be careful about going to Walmart because there might be a maggot with an AR-15. Have to be careful about going to movie theaters. Have to be careful about taking our kids to school. It's back to school season right now, and I read one account that said that in some places a child's first day of school includes their very first active shooter drill. Jesus. But add one more. The farmer's market. Not exactly a place where you think about having to worry about Nazis, but I guess it is. I mean, you tend to think about the farmer's market, and that's, you know, people bringing their organic tomatoes and their non-GMO zucchinis that are the size of baseball bats. And you don't think about it being a place where you're going to run into Nazis. But this is America, and they're everywhere. story in the New York Times looked at a Bloomington, Indiana farmers market stand. People go there for their gluten-free bread. Activists and online sleuths used federal court records and the leaked archives of a far-right message board to uncover a digital trail they say connects the couple who owns Schooner Creek Farm to an organization that promotes white nationalism and white American identity. This was in the Sunday issue of the Times. Then it blew up. They had a Schooner Creek public meeting. The situation grew so volatile that Bloomington's mayor suspended the market late last month over public safety concerns. It abruptly short-circuited the heart of Saturday morning life in this heavily white liberal town of 85,000 that's home to Indiana University. The market has more than 130 vendors and draws as many as 12,000 people downtown at the height of the growing season. They may even have to shut the market down. Meanwhile, the Schooners Creek Farm say we're not white supremacists. We keep our politics away from the farmers market. I'm disgusted at the level of lies, misinformation, falsehoods, and intimidation by those who do not know me or my family. We absolutely reject supremacy. Farmers market. Nazis. Funny how there's an actual digital trail, but you know, no, they're not. Not in Indiana. Not in Talibandiana. No, gosh, no. Not in a state that's up to its neck in the Klan. Of course not. Deny, deny, deny. Denial is not just a river in Egypt. Oh, no. It's a viable political strategy if you're a maggot, a member of the Republican House. Kevin McCarthy, of course, is the minority leader in the House of Representatives. And his leadership team has circulated a memo to the other maggots in the House. And the memo tells the members that every time a lawful, awful gun owner, especially one with ties to white supremacy and Republican politics, every time one of those goes off and shoots up a Walmart or a bar or a movie theater, school, what have you, that all the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian Republicans are supposed to immediately decry the shooting as, and this is a quote from the memo, violence from the left. It's who they are. The memo, in true Gingrich fashion, tells Republicans, if you get a question like, do you believe white nationalism is driving more mass shootings recently, they're supposed to say, white nationalism and racism are pure evil and cannot be tolerated in any form. We also can't excuse violence from the left, such as the El Paso shooter, the recent Colorado shooters, the congressional baseball shooter, Congresswoman Giffords shooter, and Antifa. There is, of course, not a shred of evidence to suggest that Patrick Cruzius, the murderer in El Paso, who said he wanted to slaughter Mexicans, who made statements that could have been ripped from the lips of Julius Geiser himself, was from the left. David in South Carolina, Stan, points out, this is how the Dayton terrorist became a Democrat. Just repeat the big lie long enough, and it will become the truth. In his manifesto, he either quoted or paraphrased Donald Trump several times. Not content to keep the lies within the caucus, though, the Tampa Bay Times reported that Representative Gus Bilirakis, a member of the House from Florida, sent the violence from the left bullshit in a newsletter to his constituents. Good work by the Tampa Bay Times picking up on this. They reported the GOP conference talking points ascribed other shootings as leftist violence despite ambiguous, if not contradictory, evidence. The shooter that wounded U.S. Representative Gabby Giffords, a Democrat, was paranoid about government and obsessed with the Arizona congresswoman. A law enforcement investigation discovered that after the fact. His political persuasions were mixed and did not appear to be a factor. Nor does it seem that the May shooters at a Colorado high school, both teenagers and bullied students, were motivated by politics. But that doesn't bother the maggots, because maggots lie. Then there's Bay County, Florida. In Bay County, Florida, the community has been recently terrorized by a young man who took video of himself, of course, holding a gun, talking about how he would defend his home. On the video, he declared, well, let's just do this.
You walking that shit? Boom! Nigger dead. Fucking KKK, this shit, bro. You fucking pussy-ass little niggas with your little fucking Glocks and shit, bro. I'll shoot anywhere in this damn house and I'll hit you with this fucking spread. I swear to fucking God, I ain't got a damn choke in this shit. I swear to God, you hear that? Once you hear that little click right here, you better fucking run. You're pretty damn good at it from running from the damn cops, let me tell you about it. Now, this is for ducks. Some ducks are black. So I'm killing niggers either way, you fucking feel me now, you fucking pussies, man? Fuck this shit, I'm out, bro.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.
I'm sorry about the usage of the word. I know it's triggering. I know it's awful. But Boom Ginger Dead just didn't carry the force of him in his own words. Now, a kid in South Carolina actually got taken into custody over something similar not long back. But down in Florida, where it's legal to shoot a 16-year-old black boy with nothing more than a can of Arizona tea and a bag of Skittles, well, Florida authorities took a pass on charging this kid with anything, even though there is a statute on the books about making terroristic threats. Bay County District Schools were inquired of, and they declared that the kid will not face any form of punishment because he did not threaten students or school personnel, which I guess leaves it to be, I guess, assumed or presumed that there are no black kids or black teachers or black service personnel or principals in anywhere in the Bay County school system. The school system palmed it off on the Bay County Sheriff's Department. The Bay County Sheriff's Department said, in spite of the deeply offensive comments made by the teenager, no crime has been committed. You know, except the terroristic threats part. Would this be happening if Hillary Clinton was president? Some degree of it, probably. All of it, no. It's Florida. Get it, Jake. Yeah. So, by the way, we're still trying to come even with Tuesday the 20th. We've got $100 to raise. You know the math. 10 at 10, 20 at 5, 5 at 20. 1 at 100. But we got $100 to go. And it would be awesome if we could catch up with that in the remaining moments of the program. Let's run over to the Skype line and see if this thing's working. Hey, Scott. Oh, Scott.
Hi.
There
my
you are.
My phone was in my pocket. My phone was in my pocket, Bob.
Oh, okay.
Because I had to come in here and get some coffee.
Is this coffee freeze dried? It's very good.
Not anymore. It's all hydrated.
Ah, well, yes.
Well, what would the word be when you take freeze-dried crystals and add them to water?
That's hydrating. What is it? They're hydrated.
Okay, good. I tried simply moisturizing it, but that didn't...
Nah, you know, Jergens has that almondy taste, and it didn't... No, not in coffee.
That was nasty. Don't do that. For you young, impressionable people out there, don't do that, kids. Anyway. Well, I don't know how to respond, Bob, or even if that's the intent of, you know, your purpose in taking calls. You know, the filibuster, the Bob-a-thon seemed to touch. It was, first of all, it was firing on all cylinders, and it seemed to touch upon every conceivable scary thing that could be touched upon. And I'm sure there's probably even more, but I really need to offer a moment of clarity and cleansing our collective palates, if I may indulge you for a few moments in that direction. Is that all right?
Or sure.
Am I overstepping my bounds or something? I just don't know how to proceed sometimes, Bob. You know, it's, or maybe it's just me. I don't know. But I wanted to be the first, hopefully, to wish you a happy National Radio Day.
Is it?
Yes, August 20th. They do this every year, Bob. Where have you been? Didn't you get the memo?
I live under a rock.
Oh. Well, for those who, like Bob, are unaware of National Radio Day, each year, August 20th, National Radio Day, recognizes...
Oh, that's why Nicole Sandler listed all the radio stations she's worked for. I get it now.
Yeah.
I saw that on Twitter earlier.
I posted a photo of yours truly, surrounded by a sheaf of ad libs, at the Jazz Mansion on Spring Grove Road, I think it was, in the Spring Grove neighborhood of Cincinnati. Holding down the radio port at Real Jazz 740 WNOP AM, which, after I left, The owners sold it to some Catholic some Catholic group, and when they stopped playing jazz, as you might expect, and it's now fucking novenas. And glory bees to the Father.
Well, you know, way back when we had the Java-based chat room.
Oh, yeah.
Years and years ago, I provided a photo of young DJ Bob.
Ooh.
And I don't know if Sparky still has those photos saved or if they just went away. But I can date it.
Young DJ Bob.
I can date it with some precision because I know it is the Christmas season of 1983, because the summer of that year I had attended a fraternity function of all of my fraternity all gathered nationally. It was an academy.
You were still hungover.
They held it at the Ohio State University in Columbus. Ah. I'd never been there before, but I went and bought myself a souvenir The Ohio State University sweatshirt. And so it was cold in Alabama, and I'm wearing my The Ohio State University sweatshirt while working the controls at WLAY AM 1450. Yes. WLAY.
What was the format?
It was basically pop, you know, top 40.
Oh, cool.
And it was programmed by Drake Chenault, and everything was there on 15-inch reels with stop tones.
Oh, wow. How cool. I never worked a semi-automated format. Let me think back. Did I? No. I never did. When I would get off when I first started, I would get off at 6.
I don't know what happened to that, but sitting here running over it in my mind. WBTG, WLAY, WQLT. We won't count WBCF. That was an abortive nightmare.
WQLT, great call sign.
Yeah, it's it too was sort of top 40-ish. It was owned by Sam Phillips, you know, of Elvis fame.
The Sun Records guy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Used to get his autograph every 2 weeks. And
how did he pay?
No, $3.35 an hour. Never missed a pay period.
All right.
And I always had work, like when I would go home on Christmas break, and hey, you want to come in and work? Damn straight I do. And so, a lot of summers, and then originally WQLT stood for Quiet Listening Time.
Oh. What is it, like easy listening, beautiful music?
Oh, yeah, it was awful.
And now, Montavante.
But by the time I was there, it was, top 40.
Well, there was a thing in radio, when
top 40 was almost bearable, but just let me finish up. Okay. By the time I was there, and, you know, this is just the redneckery of the area, it was referred to as WQLT, What Queers Listen To.
Oh, God. Well, at one point, I guess in the 80s, early 80s, mid 80s, whatever, every major market, even a few medium markets, stations would buy into a programming approach, a format called the Q format. And I never worked in one, so I don't know precisely what it was. But it was like, you remember, well, you haven't seen the new Quentin Tarantino film, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, right?
No, I probably won't see it until it makes it to some streaming platform.
Well, I haven't seen it either, even though I'm sure it's playing around, the San Diego multiplex or whatever. But apparently one of the features of the soundtrack are actual audio snippets of the great Boss Radio in Los Angeles. The Bill Drake, I think, Bill Drake originated the format. The Boss Radio, KHJ, Los Angeles. And it cuts from the actual radio broadcasts, and the personalities of the mid-60s, late-60s, are interspersed with the other music in the movie. And that was a powerhouse format. There were about, oh, I don't know, maybe a dozen stations, even a couple up in Canada, that all subscribed to the Boss format. Boss Radio was what it was called, because everything is Boss, which was a predecessor word to like great or tops or groovy or
whatever.
It's like Bob Kincaid, man, you are really Boss.
Hip, neato, groovy, keen, the bee's knees.
You're a Boss dude, Bob. But oh God, so I got to see that, if only for the KHJ stuff. But I can't remember what the guy's name, but
of course, there's always the great fake radio station, K Sky.
No, wait a minute. I don't know that one.
Let's see if I can give you a hint.
All right.
Hold on.
All right.
Just takes a second.
Okay. Everything does, Bob.
Okay, hopefully not enough to ruin the YouTube file, but this might get the job done. Working.
It like so high only dogs can hear it, or what?
I guess you can't hear it. Well, that's another limitation of the board. Okay, well, anyway, K-Sky was the fake radio station in the movie FM.
Oh, okay.
And what I was playing were the opening measures to Steely Dan's FM. Kick off your high-heeled sneakers. Oh. It's party time.
Well, there was a syndicated program, a special on radio in the early 70s. Like, it was in the wake of Woodstock, okay? And I forget the exact title of it, but the concept was the greatest rock and roll concert that never happened. And what they did was they took all these great current rock music cuts off of albums, interspersed with great crowd noise and ambient noise. And the thing was like, not hosted, but announced by Rod Serling. It was one of his last projects before going off into the great beyond in the mid-70s. But what they would do is sell this weekend package, and it ran the whole weekend on AOR radio stations all over the country. I'll have to find it. There's a couple of links about it, but nobody seems to have the whole thing on MP3 or YouTube file or whatever. There are snippets. I should have prepared, but I didn't know the conversation was going to go this way.
Oh, sure.
But it was
didn't.
Supposedly quite good. I mean, nobody was fooled. Nobody thought it was an actual concert occurring, because they kept saying, you know, it's all in your mind. It's all in your imagination. It's all on the radio. But, geez. I was going to ask you
something. Oh, I'm sorry. It was not K-Sky. It was the Q-Sky.
Q-Sky. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you, Randy. That's the ad hoc horn fact-checking department.
Have you ever lived anywhere? Atlanta would have probably had it. Would have had it, but I think it was before you got there. There was a woman known as the Fabulous Mouth.
No.
She would do a TV commercial for local radio stations who had this particular format, And they would take a montage of the various air personalities, and she would lip sync the audio from the montage of actual radio content real fast. And she was good, man. She was real good.
Now, I just when I was in Atlanta, one of the things I remembered was that they had a jock who was reasonably popular on one of the popish stations, who was Australian, which immediately which immediately got me thinking. Wait a minute, maybe I should move to Australia and do my American accent. You know, real Southern and real redneck. Maybe find a maybe find a country gig.
Well, there are cowboys down there, down under.
Well, yes, and just to keep the program topical, I recently saw a video from, you know, down in the cooler regions of New South Wales. It was tweeted by, I think, John Cornholio of Texas.
Oh, yes.
Maybe it wasn't. It was some maggot turd. And it was video of kangaroos, lots of them, hopping through the snow. And the
horse open sleigh.
One kangaroo open sleigh doesn't work. But the caption was, well, sure, the climate crisis is real unless you're in Australia. And there was this long, I mean, the ratio was huge of people going, dumbass, it's winter down there, and it does snow in some parts of Australia. It was the modern video equivalent of Jim Inhofe bringing a goddamn snowball into the well of the Senate in January.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the House and Senate, maybe it's not quite as bad as it was, but at one time it was populated by a lot of stupid fucks, you know? I mean, they're still in there, some of them. I was watching a thing on YouTube last night. Oh, I know what it was. I was listening to audio of the late, great Tom Snyder doing his radio show over ABC Radio in the early 90s, interviewing an author who had written a book called Capital Gains. And it was about the Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill business. And it refreshed my memory. I don't know. I guess we probably shouldn't relitigate that madness. But the thing that should piss people off today is that the Democrats woefully mishandled that whole Clarence Thomas thing. They could have. There was apparently an FBI report 3 weeks earlier where they interviewed Anita Hill and had basically what her allegations were. And the members of the Senate panel, the Judiciary Committee, were apparently aware of it, but chose not to bring it up until, like, at the last minute when the full Senate was going to vote, or the full panel was going to vote, I forget which, somebody apparently leaked it or word got out. But apparently Senator Metzenbaum of Ohio had the information. I believe Ted Kennedy had the information. And had they handled it appropriately, we may not have Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Slappy Thomas sitting on the bench. You know?
Well, that goes back to it was a tragedy of errors, not a comedy, nothing comic about it. It was a tragedy of errors.
Yeah.
And it was mishandled from jump. Including the so-called Democratic frontrunner. He had the opportunity to bring in witnesses who would have corroborated Anita Hill's statement.
You bleeped out there. Who had the power to?
The present Democratic frontrunner, yes.
Okay, yeah, I figured, because he was the chairman of the Judiciary Committee back then.
Yeah.
Well, see, and that troubles me, because the whole notion of the presidency, if you're going to be at the highest executive job in the land, your decision-making capabilities must be razor sharp. You must have a keen sense of what the fuck's going on and what is appropriate and what is not. Now, we know from going on soon to be, I guess, 3 years of, you know, President Tochi's, that such is not the case with him. There is nothing keen about his intellect. He hasn't got an intellect. He's a sponge. He's a form of lower life who, when you poke it, it reacts.
He is a hollow drum. He only makes a noise when thumped.
Bingo. That sounds like a Molly Ivan observation.
Actually, it's Gary Jennings describing a Moctezuma.
Okay, all right. I have no idea who that is. Either one, Gary or who is it? Inform me, Bob. You always do.
Moctezuma. We mispronounce his name as Montezuma.
Okay. He invented the runs, the trots. No, I guess I'm wrong about that. Sorry.
That's all right. That's all right. Yep.
But you see where I'm going. I mean, and if Biden is the nominee, you know, as I did with Hillary, I guess I'll have to hold my nose and cup my crotch and go ahead and pull the lever or mark the space on the ballot. But...
You guess?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't guess. I'm going to have to do it.
Well, look. Let's go through this real quick, Scott. One, right. Your state, California, which up until this year had to wait until June to have its say so in the primaries.
Yeah.
Which often meant just, you know, voting after all the real. Contests were over.
Yeah.
You get a real vote this year.
Oh, yeah. We're a part of Super Tuesday.
You're voting on Super Tuesday. People like me, I responded to a question on Twitter, I think, yesterday or today, asking, you know, who's your preferred candidate? And I responded, I don't have one. Because a bunch of people in Iowa and South Carolina and New Hampshire are going to determine for me who the candidates are by the time I get to vote in May of 2020 in the primary. Furthering my argument that we need a one-day national primary, because we managed to have a national general election in one day. We need a one-day national primary about a month before the convention, give everybody a chance to just campaign their little hearts out wherever they choose to, and we find out who the nominee is. Because this bullshit of letting states that are iffy as to whether they will even give their electoral college votes, and that's another issue, of course, to the Democrat, determine who the viable Democratic candidates are, is horseshit of the most monumental order.
Yeah, because by the time
I'm not gooning on South Carolinians or Iowans or New Hampshireites. But the fact of the matter is,
three little states ought not determine the viability of our nominee, especially in elections that are as existential as this one coming is going to be.
When is your primary in West Virginia?
It's like the second or third Tuesday in May.
Well, see, at that point, your options are, you're like in a restaurant. I think you've talked about these Asian restaurants where the concept is franchised. The guy opens the restaurant, buys the pre-printed menus, buys the industrial cans of chow mein or whatever it is, and your choice in the matter is to pick from a pre-printed menu that you had no say in. Basically, you get to vote on somebody else's choices, is what you're saying, which is stupid.
It is certainly anti-democratic. And it's an idea whose time has come and yet we'll never get here. Because again, to reiterate, the reason for all of this is the fact that it is a money-making scheme. It is a welfare wealth redistribution scheme for the multimillionaire for-profit media.
Yeah. Well, and we could certainly take a page from other more enlightened countries, don't you think, who have a limited run-up to elections. In some places, it's like 6 or 8 weeks or maybe 12 weeks or whatever, and that's it. If you can't
the only problem being that limited run-up is, for the most part, in parliamentary elections. So it's like one great big giant congressional election here. And you're not the nominating process is nowhere near the same as ours. The fundamental flaw in our electoral politics is the presence is that welfare system for the media. Whether it's newspapers, local radio stations, you know, everybody gets a piece of the pie, so everybody has a buy-in, and everybody has a reason to support the status quo.
And that's true of the debates as well. I mean, the first one was on NBC in May, I guess it was, and then the first one was NBC, then there was one on
CNN.
Wasn't Fox, CNN. And then the next one in September will be ABC. So you've got probably a CBS debate. And I don't think the Democrats are doing a Fox debate. Or at one time they said they weren't going to do one. Am I remembering correctly?
I think you are, yeah.
So all of this is tied into some sort of fucking promotional device for the corporate media. And you look at first of all, with the Democrats, there are too many fucking people up there to start with over two nights. So you've got that. But then you've got the stupid moderators and panelists on the media side whose questions are beyond stupid. It's like they're not asking for purposes of gaining information. They're asking for purposes of creating sound bites for the next, for their morning news shows or for the evening news show or for whatever the fuck, you know? And I'm old enough to remember, I remember the Nixon-Kennedy debate, but I know most of it as a result of hindsight and research after the fact. There were no debate in 64, there was no debate in 68. There was no debate in 72. The next debate was Ford Carter in 76. I remember those. I remember the 80 debates. I helped report from Kansas City the 84 debate between Reagan and Mondale, and so on down the line. But at some point, it stopped. The debates themselves stopped being a nonpartisan.
Okay, Scott, you're mixing apples and oranges.
Well, I do that, Bob.
Because the presidential debates are, or were, the ones you're talking about. Those were the ones that were sponsored by the League of Women Voters.
Yeah.
And were not proprietary to any one platform or channel. Now, what,
they were in the public interest, Bob.
Well,
need,
yeah,
and necessity.
Right. And that cut into the media's ability to make a fast buck off of it. And so that's why I don't call these things that are happening now debates. I call them pageants.
Yeah, and you're right to
they're
do it, Bob.
They're staged like them. You've got a journalist. And when we come back, they'll answer a question about little children in cages.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything that has a toss to break in it is by definition fishy, because it means that it's being driven by a profit motive. And so these pageants are scams that are set up by the multimillionaire for-profit media as vehicles to sell advertising. I mean, this is why, I mean, I don't have a staff to go out there and try to find ads for this program. We rely on the goodwill of the community to keep it going. But if I did, I'd still feel pretty awful about it, because it would mean that I was using this platform to deliver the people who share their precious finite time engaging with it, to deliver them to the tender mercies of people who want to take their money from them, quite often for absolute bullshit products.
Yeah.
We had to be at the hospital today. Margie had a colonoscopy. Everything's okay. But I sat there and read an Atlantic profile piece on Joe Rogan, who is the second most popular podcaster on planet Earth, and who has occasioned a bunch of people getting all hot and bothered about the fact that there are 9 million views for his podcast talking to Bernie. It is a mostly male audience, blah, blah. But again, he's fabulously wealthy multiple times over because of the money that he gets vitamin companies to give him to hustle their products. Do you remember?
Yeah.
You remember when I pissed off so many members of the Horn Family Community Congregation with my nightly pitches for Horn Nutraceuticals? I was trying to make a point.
Yeah.
That all these vitamin hustles are a load of horse shit. But they are lucrative horse shit. And so the same thing obtains with these goddamn pageants. They have absolutely nothing to do with civic duty or civic engagement, and everything about making a fast goddamn buck for a bunch of fucking right-wing billionaire corporations who hate our goddamn guts. And it really is as simple as that.
Well, let me ask you this, and I'm surprised. I don't think I've heard anybody broach this topic, this question that I'm about to pose to you. Given the foregoing, given what you said about the primary system is fucked up, and the debate pageant system is fucked up, and the whole thing is not designed for as it was intended to be. It's getting in, if anything, it's getting in the way of what was intended to be in terms of our orderly.
Yeah, we have to remember that in the origins of this country, candidates deemed it, especially presidential candidates, deemed campaigning to be beneath their dignity.
Yeah.
I'd like to return to that day.
You give me that kind of power, and I'll make sure that a fucking candidate can't campaign on anything more complicated than a goddamn pogo stick.
Well, I don't have any problem with people campaigning, okay? Because there is some, you know, benefit and use to find out where people are in the matters of public interest and topics and questions of the day, okay? So it's fine as far as it goes. But here's my question that I haven't heard anybody pose yet. Let's say somebody on our side is the nominee for the party and Trump is the nominee for the GOP. And we get to like September, mid-September of 2020, and it's the night of the first debate. Is there a benefit in the Democratic candidate not participating? And the reason I put it that way, as you say, Trump is like a drum. You only hear from him when he's struck upon. What is the quote?
He makes a noise only when thumped.
Okay. He needs someone to go after. He needs someone to respond to him. Maybe this time.
And you know what? You can't. No, you can't. You can't. No.
Now, you can't opt out?
I've heard a lot of people say that they expect him to refuse to debate.
No, I would never consider that because that's not who he is. He needs the spotlight.
But the Democrat can't do it because that would just cede the platform to him. And look what ceding the platform has done to this country, just in terms of people on our side saying, well, you know, we don't want to be like that Limbaugh and have a radio show or anything.
Now, how would it cede the platform to Trump? Because to me,
because then he would run around saying, they're scared of me. They know they're going to lose. They know how great I am. They know how great America I've made. They know that we're just getting greater and greater. And they know they don't dare appear on the same stage as me.
And you think that people in the middle or the middle left or the far left would buy into anything that he says about the Democrat not participating?
The far left? We're not talking about the far left. We're talking about Emery and Marvelline on their Barca loungers.
Well,
and
who, Bob?
I'll tell you
nobody,
who.
Nobody. I don't give a fuck what Emery and Marvelline think. They're not going to vote for the Democratic candidate anyway.
Well, they might if they're in Iowa. You know, they might they might if they're in the heartland, because we're getting beaten over the head with this notion that, you know, we've got to. Well, I mean, look at what Jill Biden said today. Not Joe, Jill.
Okay.
She was in Iowa, New Hampshire, who knows? I think it was Iowa. And she said, well, you know, your candidate may be better than Joe on health care. But what we have to remember is we have to vote for the person who can beat Trump. And Joe, the polls show, Joe is the person who can beat Trump. Well, that's a bullshit statement because most of the polling shows, yeah, Biden beating Trump, Bernie beating Trump, Elizabeth Warren beating Trump, Kamala Harris beating Trump. Shit, if they polled far enough down, they'd probably show Andrew Yang beating Trump. Maybe it'd show Marianne Williamson beating Trump. But wow. One, those are polls that are fully 1 year and 3 months away from the general election. And two, the Democrat cannot refuse to debate Trump, no.
Well, maybe I phrased it wrong, okay?
Because these things are so stylized, maybe. Scott. First of all, they all have rules. And we've seen him in a debate performance once. We know who he is after as long as he's been in office. And you know what?
if I was any of those people, I would welcome the opportunity to debate him, because they are going to be rich with moments to humiliate and denigrate him. If he tries stalking somebody around the stage, say Elizabeth Warren, she turns on him and says, "Listen, bub, quit stalking me. You've been credibly accused of sexual assault by 23 different women, and if you lay a hand on me, I'll have you fucking arrested, president or not."
Or she could carry a taser, unless the rules prohibit it. Let me just tell you where I'm going. Maybe the idea of non-participation on the debate stage by the Democrat was too much. If the situation where we find ourselves is a result of things being done the same way over and over, then doesn't it behoove us to to try different things? Do you get that? I mean,
That ain't one of the different things we need to try.
Okay, well, what I'm saying is, and perhaps you're correct, that the better way to go is for whoever the nominee is to not allow him to run his number on the debate stage. Is that pretty much what you're getting at?
I'm saying you interrupt him. You fuck with his rhythm. You keep him on his heels. But the thing is, you got to remember, Scott, Hillary won every debate.
I know, but
it
Jesus,
didn't
I mean,
matter.
I'm sorry, I blocked you.
It didn't matter. Debates don't turn people much one way or the other. I mean, just to give you an idea, just a couple of pieces of breaking news. Mick Mulvaney, who is wearing multiple hats in the administration, he's acting. You know, he was OMB, and now he's acting chief of staff or whatever. He's now telling Republicans, after trying to run the "we're not going to have a recession" thing up the flagpole, now he's telling Republican supporters of the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, if there is a recession, it'll be mild and short. So now they're kind of giving away that it's probably coming. And then the other thing, we cannot discount the idea that because I don't know what a Vegas odds maker would put on this, but there's a chance he won't be the nominee. He gets a little nuttier every day. I got breaking news right here as we come to the end of the program.
All right.
So he was supposed to have a meeting with the Prime Minister of Denmark.
Oh, is this about Greenland?
And so he tweets, "Denmark is a very special country with incredible people, but based on Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen's comments that she would have no interest in discussing the purchase of Greenland, I will be postponing our meeting scheduled in 2 weeks for another time. The Prime Minister was able to save a great deal of expense and effort for both the United States and Denmark by being so direct. I thank her for that and look forward to rescheduling sometime in the future." He's offended. And he's also playing a game because she's a NATO ally, and that, of course, means that, you know, he hates her.
Well, he doesn't. Is it that he just doesn't want to talk to anyone from Denmark? See, because my rule of thumb is the reason that he gives is never the reason for anything.
Right, that's what I'm getting at.
Okay.
Either that or he is so unutterably mad that he thinks he really could buy Greenland. In which case I go back to my previous thesis, he may not be the nominee. He may wind up going feet first out of the Oval Office. He's not a well man.
Is, Will he be wearing a jacket with extremely
long sleeves? I'm talking about, you know, pining for the fjords, singing with the choir eternal.
Oh, dear. Well,
I mean, if you heard those sound bites at the beginning of the program, he is mad. And he's the business with the mooch turning on him is driving him madder.
Well, you mentioned Mulvaney, and in closing, let me commend a bit of video and audio to the Horn family if they.
Oh, it's the first time we've.
One of the guests was Larry Kudlow, the president's.
I played that last night. He was drunker than Adams off ox.
Well, that was one thing I wondered, but his deal about here's the problem, people. America is afraid of being optimistic. What the hell is that? Just based on
you know a country that's getting its Walmarts and nightclubs and schools and movie theaters and whatnot, shopping centers and it shot up. It's going to be hard to scrounge up a lot of optimism.
Well, you think? But anybody who didn't see the full interview, it runs about 9 minutes, 8 minutes or something. Find it and look at it because that's the state of things in our executive branch. Which is why it's important to get activated and energized and have your friends get activated and energized and registered and listen to the candidates from which we are choosing. And as we whittle them down, remember the object of the exercise is you may be disappointed if your candidate didn't become the nominee, but take it the next step and support whoever the Democratic candidate is.
And that used to just be taken for granted. Democrats vote for Democrats.
Yeah.
It's not complex mathematics.
I would say
on your end, going back to what we were talking about earlier, you get a real primary vote. I don't.
Enjoy it.
And as the old knight says in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, choose wisely.
Yeah. And I believe me, Bob, you know, it's not a matter of enjoying being a part of Super Tuesday. It's a solemn duty to choose wisely. And I am going to do my utmost to support in the primary here in California the candidate that A, has a chance in hell of beating Trump, and B, who has a finger on the pulse of America, and know that has solutions to these many, many important, critical issues that we're facing. We cannot do more of the same. We have had our last chance to do dysfunction, gridlock, and more of the same. Now is the time for a major course correction. So that's what I'm taking in to deposit my ballot, marking the box on my ballot. And it's a fucking solemn.
It is solemn. And I got to tell you, you've seen that meme out there on the internet of the guy with his head in his hand and, oh no, not this shit again. You've seen that one, right? It's from the 60s, the gray suit, you know.
Yeah.
And there's another one that features Jean-Luc Picard. Again, not this shit again. I had a real flash of deja vu when I saw that Susan Sarandon is back out on the hustings.
Oh, God.
Accusing, didn't dare mention her by name, but said that at least her preferred candidate, Bernie, didn't used to be a Republican. When the irony in all of that
is...
See,
that shit is not helpful.
No, it's not helpful at all. And it's counterproductive, and it is divisive, And that way lies 2016 and a really ugly little scab pulling party. And the, of course, the ultimate irony is that, and look, I mean, it's real. I mean, it's verifiable. It's factual. Bernie, you know, she says, you know, at least Bernie's never been a Republican. Well, Bernie's only a Democrat when he's running for president.
Yeah, he's actually a Democratic socialist.
No, what he is an independent. There is no Democratic Socialist Party of Vermont. He is an independent from Vermont, running as a Democrat. And so, no. Let's have an election and a campaign at least tangentially based upon the merits.
Well, and it goes back to what I said, Bob. I didn't say it this way, but it's what I meant. If we keep doing what we've always done, we'll keep getting what we've always gotten. And how is that a complex thing? How do people not get their heads around that notion and stop doing what we've always done?
You said something earlier, and I want to come back to that as well. You said you're going to vote for the person you deem able to beat Trump. And I'm not critiquing that statement. But I would, however, submit to you that that same bullshit polling data suggests that a whole lot of people could beat Trump. I think Pete Buttigieg and maybe Beto are in a statistical tie with him. But everybody north of them, beats Trump.
Well, and, I don't mean and, as told by the polling.
And, I mean, and frankly,
someone who I know in my heart of hearts, based on my understanding of their record and their history and who they are as people, to the extent that that can be determined, that's what I mean, deem able to beat Trump. But you could be right about the thing about it may not be Trump up there that we're going after. He may just go.
I mean, I'd say there's at least a one in a million chance that it's Pence.
And God, we don't need that motherfucker as chief executive. That man is crazier than who's the craziest person you can think of.
Crazier than a sprayed roach. Just use that. It always comes in handy.
There you go. But anyway, I just can't overemphasize the importance of becoming engaged and focused, and don't get sidetracked by the nonsense.
Well, I really can't overemphasize the importance of California's placement in Super Tuesday, because California will be able to kick a lot of people off that stage. Just by sheer numbers.
Well, a lot of them are going to be gone anyway by the time primary season starts, I think.
I'd say, you know, maybe a third. I bet you Marianne Williamson won't be gone. I bet you Andrew Yang won't be gone. You know, who? Bullock? You know, Hickenlooper's out? We're way over time, but another conversation for a future day is, do senators really make the best presidential candidates?
Where there haven't been a lot of people who eventually become president who were in the Senate.
I mean, Barack Obama is actually an exception to the rule rather than proof of it.
Now, are you counting people who were vice president and who stepped in? I mean, because Kennedy was in the Senate. Nixon was in the Senate.
Yeah.
Who else? Well, those two come to mind.
McGovern was in the Senate.
Yeah, but he didn't get in.
No, he got thumped.
But what's interesting is that,
you know, vice presidency notwithstanding, the top tier of Democratic candidates are all senators. I'm sorry, and they're all senators who really have in the last 20 years never had much of an opportunity to get anything done because they've been in the minority for so goddamn long. So,
well, that's the truth.
Yeah.
Well, Bob, is
No, Randy. Reagan was not a U.S. Senator from California. He was former governor of California.
Well, in some cases, governors have not been all that stellar.
Well, but we also tend to pull from our governors because there's a perception that Republican or Democrat, they've had some experience in running an executive branch of some sort.
Well, and Reagan did.
Carter,
an executive
Reagan,
branch.
Carter, Reagan, Clinton, Bush.
Well,
I mean, there are no pat answers.
I think you settled my argument for me, Bob. I mean, that they, in the case of Reagan and W, they tended as governors to run their state into the ground. I mean, and did it with the country as well. Poor Carter couldn't get a hand from the Democratic House and Senate of his era, and plus he was saddled by fucking inflation through the roof. That poor guy. I mean, and strangely enough, he had done pretty well in Georgia as governor. But circumstances, you know, and then the damn hostage taking in Iran.
That really was the end of it. That,
oh, God.
You know, that and the Nixon Ford inflation that he inherited.
Well,
and, you know,
that's
that was
what
the end
I
of
mean.
That game.
But, listen very carefully and discern what they're saying and see how it fits in the grand scheme of things in terms of, can you see this person in charge of the national government for the next 4 to 8 years doing an effective, viable job of not only getting done what needs to get done, but correcting problems caused by the last 35 fucking years?
Yeah, I mean,
that's
for instance, just for what it's worth, I think a governor is probably a better choice than, say, somebody who before getting to the Senate was a career prosecutor. We don't need a prosecutor in chief.
No, we don't. I don't think.
Some kind of executive. Well, never mind. But Darlene in Connecticut reminds us, FDR too, governor of New York.
Yeah.
Yeah. Randy reminds us that Pence would actually know how to use power, and that is very, very bad. So, yeah, that too. And by the way, a note coming in from Suman as we wrap things up here. About those polls, I don't believe those polls one damn bit. There are a whole bunch of people who are ashamed to admit they will vote for Nitwit Nero. Remember all those polls in 2016? All too damned well.
Yeah. And God knows we got
Oh, and I've got a cowbell here. That's for Terrace. Subject line, debate. Anyone who debates Orange Hitler should bring the Cat in the Hat, the book, and ask him to read the first page. When he refuses, say, thought so. Can't read. All right, Scott, we got to get out of here. Full quarter hour over.
All right, Bob. Well, take care, man. And
Happy National Radio Day to you.
Well, it I look back with those days, to those days, with great fondness, from 72 to 98, in and out of radio. But it ain't the business that I left 21 years ago.
Up and down the dial. Yeah.
Well, that too. But anyway, yes, have a blessed radio day, Bob.
Take care, Scott. And see ya.
See you next time.
Later. Bye now.
Bye.
My buddy Scott in San Diego. Time to get out of here. So tomorrow we will find ourselves with a $300 fundraising goal. But thanks so much to Sharon for the Have a Show on Me. Thank you so kindly. That little box there is there at headon.live under the contribute interface. If you just want to sponsor a whole program, well, you click that box. And thank you again. Thanks to everybody who keeps this program on the air. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time, what I was talking about earlier. That's why I use that phrase, your precious finite time. Nobody's making any more of it. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks earlier to Sparky. Thanks to Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20 years this year, 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And the struggle continues. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.